RunDNA has an incredible range of running and walking footwear, apparel and accessories, catering for anyone who is looking for the right shoe and fit. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists right across Adelaide. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. So if it's time for new walkers or runners, you can find RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or the other location, 391 Fullerton Road at Fullerton. Both stores open 7 days a week, plenty of off-street parking. You can find them online as well.
It's the 3rd of July. This is Hooked on Sport. I'm Wallace Long, and welcome to Ben Hook.
Wallace Long, good morning. Great to be chatting.
Should we get on to Fair or Farce?
I think we should.
Brendan Favola playing country footy is good for the game. Fair or Farce?
What do you think? I'm going to ask you first. What do you think?
I saw the footy, and I've got to say it's a farce. It just reminds me of, was it Dermot Brereton who actually had the video cameras, and David Reece Jones, they were playing and they had to have the cameras on. And I think Dermot was a bit concerned he was going to get hit.
Well, that was David Reece Jones's usual mode of operation in his day. Belting blokes was certainly one of his leading skills in footy. I agree. I think this is a farce. God, I'm tired of this, Wallace. Retired star plays one game as a cash grab under the guise of helping community footy. Give me a spell. There's the obligatory fight, or what we often see is this supposed star player who's in no fit state to be jumping onto a football field these days hobbles off after 5 minutes. I don't know. I just don't like it. I think that makes the club look desperate. I think it makes the league look amateur and a bit childish. And the player looks like a caricature of his former self. I mean, Fev's running out there. He's probably 15, 20 kilos overweight. I just reckon if you're going to play in those sorts of things, how about preparing properly? How about getting fit? How about demonstrating to the young kids what you can achieve if you're prepared to commit yourself to the sport and see where you want to go with it? And instead, we get these overweight, out of shape, zero condition, yesterday's men stepping out in pursuit of this, I don't know, cheap faux glory. And then, of course, you get the inevitable knucklehead in the other club who wants to start a fight with him. So I don't know. I just reckon, look, a few clubs might make some money out of it with gate takings and over the bar that night with the inevitable speakers night. But I just feel like it's a bit of a pointer to what's really bad about professional footy rather than what's really good about it. And I'd love to see a better example. I think there's room for this, but I'd love to see someone go around and play 7 or 8 games for 7 or 8 different clubs in 7 or 8 different leagues, but do it. Do it where you're fit and you're actually going to go up forward, Fev, and kick 6 or 7 for this team and have a big day out. I think that's what that would attract the fans, if you ask me.
Or they could have all the lads that have finished for a year out of footy, they could go and do like a Harlem Globetrotters event all around the state.
See, I think there's merit in that, but I actually want to see guys who are still around the peak of their game. They're obviously going to be a little bit off speed, but I don't need to see 45-year-old blokes who are 110 kilos getting in pushing shoves with the local farmer.
Richmond should be penalised for enabling the behaviour of Tom Lynch. Fair or farce?
I'm really hot on this. I think this is fair. I think the victim blaming of Jordan Butts, who was the bloke who got belted in that scene on Sunday afternoon, I found that as infuriating as the coward punch itself. And that's what it was. It was a coward punch. But in the post-match, both player and his coach, Adam Muse, were grizzling about Jordan Butts' method of defence. It was almost like Jordan Butts deserved it. He got what was coming to him. And they never actually said that. And of course, they were saying there was no excuse for the behaviour. But I mean, and I watched a fair bit of that game, and then I was spending a bit of time watching the TV review shows afterwards, and they had no reason to complain about the way Jordan Butts defended. He defended strongly, but he was clean. He did his job to the letter, and in the end, he was the one under scrutiny more than Tom Lynch himself. I was really disappointed by this. And you know what I'm actually looking forward to now, Wallace, is seeing how much whistle Jordan Butts gets this coming Sunday when the Crows host Melbourne. We're not a betting podcast, of course, but I would put the line at about 5.5, plus or minus 5.5. I reckon that's about how many free kicks he's going to give away just because the umpires will absolutely be red hot on him. I just reckon it was really disappointing the way Richmond just were determined to point the finger of blame away from the guy who absolutely let them down and at the guy who was doing his job and copped what he never, ever deserved. So, yeah, Richmond should get a talking to from the AFL about the way they handled it, if you ask me.
Side question on this one. Do you think that the coach missed an opportunity to pull Lynch off early?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I do think that he's an experienced footballer and he should be able to handle these sorts of things. But at the same time, he was clearly showing signs that he was frustrated and things were going to explode. And it was a poor miss by his coach not to at least address it with him and just get him off the field early on and say, hey, how are we going here? It looks like you are not really with us. Because that team needs him to be leading and setting an example, not frustrated, swinging at players, arguing with umpires, and letting his teammates down. It's the best thing for the football club that he's having 5 weeks off. In fact, I would probably be thinking right now with Tom Lynch, what have they got, 8 games left? He's going to miss 5. I'd only let him play one more. You get a farewell game, mate, and that's it. You're done with us because you are letting us down in far greater capacity than you are helping us.
AFL football needs a wild card round, fair or farce?
I'm fair on this, and I reckon this is one of those issues that not a lot of people who love their footy can really get their head around. But right now in the AFL competition, we've got 2 9-team divisions. So we've got 9 teams that are kind of challenging for a flag, and the other 9 that are really out in the ether, in the abstract, kind of building a list. And if you look at the way it's structured at the moment, Wallace, we've got older teams that are successful and younger teams that are still biding their time. Number 1 ranked team is Collingwood. They're the oldest list in the competition. Number 2 ranked team is Brisbane. They're the second oldest team in the competition. Number 4 ranked team is Geelong. They're the 4th oldest team in the competition. So we've got all of these old clubs out there that are successful. And the rest are just waiting for maturity to happen. And I think that they're happy to keep biding their time, find their draft picks, wait until they can really hit the competition hard when they've got their group together, probably a little bit like what the Adelaide Crows have done this year. So I ask you this, Wallace, and I really want your opinion the other way. Imagine if we had a final 10. Now, a final 10 does reward mediocrity, but let's have a think about this. GWS would be a lock for finals, right? They're 3 games clear of anyone who could knock them out of 10th spot. They're the team currently in 9th. So they're playing finals. And I think most people would say, yeah, they're going to do some damage in finals. Port would be 10th. Carlton, Sydney and Essendon would all be a game out of finals. Essendon with a game in hand. So 13th, which is Essendon, is a live final shot right now. And I think it changes the whole narrative of the competition. I mean, you think about the way people view those teams at the moment, Carlton, Sydney, Essendon, Port Adelaide. And all of them are, well, they're washed up, they're done, forget about them. There's problems at Carlton, Port Adelaide are changing their coach. There's massive problems with the football department at Essendon. Sydney have had injuries. Maybe they're going to turn it around, but there's huge question marks over Dean Cox. I mean, could Sydney get a run on with a final 10? Could Port Adelaide get a run on with a final 10? We know their quality. They were preliminary finalists last year. Could the doom scenario at Carlton be replaced with a bit of hope if they can find some form between now and the next 8 weeks of the season, fall into 10th and then pick off a scalp when they play the 7th ranked team? I think there is so much upside in a final 10 over and above the fact that it does reward mediocrity. I think it's also great for fans that you stay alive a little bit longer. What I don't want to see, Wallace, is a competition where we routinely have 6 sides that aren't really trying because they know that the final 8 really is beyond them for a year or 2 or 3. I'd prefer to see a final 10 where everyone feels like, oh, you know what? If we have a good 5 weeks, if we fall into 10th, then have a good 5 weeks, who knows? We might be able to make it to a preliminary final, and that would make an ordinary season a really successful one.
Yeah, I agree with you. It works really well with the Major League Baseball, keeps everybody interested, and it makes them play right to the end of the season if they've got a chance.
I've got a name for it as well because I don't love wild card round. I was having a think about this before. How about the admission finals? If you win, you're admitted into the final 8, the admission finals. There you are, AFL. You can have that one for free.
I think that's about all it's worth, Hooky. Australian tennis is in good shape. Fair or farce?
Farce. Never been in worse shape. I don't know if you've been watching much Wimbledon over the last few days. There were 9 men in the first round of Wimbledon. 4 of them got through. Alex de Minaur, Rinki Hijikata, Jordan Thompson, Alex Vukic. 1 woman out of 6 got through in the women's draw, and she was Russian 3 months ago. Daria Zakina, who's just turned to become an Australian, changed her nationality. So we're having an awful record at the moment. Alex de Minaur, look, we love him. He's ranked 11, but he looks further away than ever from winning a slam, doesn't he? I mean, he's a very, very good player who really does struggle when it gets to the pointy end of competitions. And then everyone else who was in either of those major draws, quite frankly, just looked like field fillers. None of them you think are going to be ever going to be doing a lot of damage. I'm interested to watch Maya Joint. She won in Eastbourne last week, and so she might have a future. The youngster bounced out in the first round. But, yeah, gee, the rest of them just looks a little bit pedestrian at the moment. And it's particularly disappointing because it's at Wimbledon on grass, where historically we've been very, very successful. I think Australian tennis is in terrible shape.
Having signed for the Women's Australian Open, the SA government better have a secondary budget for top-line players. Fair or farce?
Yeah, this is fair. And I think when you reflect that the Victorian government has paid the freight for the Men's Australian Open, which is going to Royal Melbourne, and they've forked out the cash for Rory McIlroy. So I think it's incumbent upon South Australia and Golf Australia to find out a way to get some big-name players into the Women's Australian Open. And I'm actually fairly confident that's probably what they're thinking about. I was having a look at the LPGA Tour. They go to Singapore and China in late February, early March. So you're going to have a number of the big-name US players who are going to be over this side of the world in that time zone, in that time frame. So it makes sense. I wouldn't co-sanction. It's already co-sanctioned with the Ladies European Tour. Now, they're all unheard of. I mean, I just was having a look at the order of merit. I think I had to get through 34 players before I found two that weren't Australian that I was aware of. So you've got to go to the US Ladies PGA Tour. But you've got to chase, I reckon, these are the big four. Gino Titical, Thailand player. She's been top seven in every one of the five majors and is probably the next big thing on the LPGA Tour. Was a threat to Minji Lee for a number of holes going down that final stretch of the PGA Championship that she won. Maya Stark won the US Open on a very, very difficult course, and I want to see her come here and play at Cooyonga and potentially play more Australian events in the coming years. Nelly Korda is the most marketable player on the planet. And then Lydia Ko is the other one, who's the reigning Open champion from St Andrews, a New Zealander who's played here in the past as well and has a great relationship with Adelaide. So I don't know that you want to go to a full field for the women, but I think if you could find 80 or 90 players, sort of almost like a bit of a Masters field, about that type of number, have a cut at about 60, but if you can get maybe three or four of those four names that I shared with you, I reckon it'll be a really, really good event, and it'll be very, very popular as well.
Awesome, Hooky. Good to chat.
You too, mate. Excellent. Well done. And we'll see you next week.